Beach Business Breakfast Show. It's one Mel. How are you, Mel?
Good, thank you.
Melanie Nicholson Consulting. Yep.
Big Bright Bubble.
Yep. And Jeremy, how are you?
Oh, I'm great, Dave. Thanks.
Yep. Jeremy and I swap shirts.
Yeah.
So I'm
just
missing my
list.
So just a reminder about the Beach Business Breakfast, 7:30 every third Thursday of the month here at Rover the Surf Club Function Room. $10 gets you informal networking, a great opportunity to meet fantastic business people like Mel, who just had Jeremy, myself, others. So we get about 50 to each breakfast, and it's great for me to get involved in. So.
Yeah, I think our variance is probably 10-15%. So if the weather's nice, you get an extra 5%. If you're not real good, you lose about 10%.
We're talking about our aim in December is to have 100 people here doing business day.
Speed beach networking.
Yeah, and we're on the beach, so we'll see how we go. Stay tuned for that. So, Melanie, welcome.
Thank you.
Do you prefer Melanie or Mel?
Mel's fine.
Mel, yep. Good. Excellent. So, Melanie Nicholson Consulting. So, before we get to that, what's your background? What have you sort of had your life?
Yes, so my background's quite varied. I joined the Air Force when I was 17, I grew up in Brisbane, but I got posted to Williamtown, which I had no idea where it was, at 17, and so I spent about 6 years in the Air Force. Then I went to the private sector and worked for Kerry Packer for about 8 months, and then I did a huge about face and worked for the Child Support Agency, the Department of Human Services, for about 10 years. So.
Air Force.
Media.
Really weird. So with the Air Force, so you're 17, did you just wake up one morning and go, I want to join the Air Force, or did you see an ad, or was it something you'd always wanted
actually,
to do?
I know, this is really embarrassing. It's called Top Gun. I saw Top Gun, and I thought it would be really exciting, even though I wasn't a pilot. So, and I just wanted to get out of Brizzy, so it was, and have an adventure. It was a bit random, but it was good, and I did some really different work in there.
Excellent. So you lived on base up there?
I lived on base, and then I lived in Derby Street, which is where I'm living now. So I've lived Derby Street 16 years ago.
I guess that's the beauty of Williamtown, Newcastle, is that you're actually in a pretty cosmopolitan sort of area. You can live in a really nice place. Not that there's anything wrong with Townsville and places like that, but the other bases are a bit more remote, right? Like even Richmond, like you kind of out.
So it wasn't considered a long drive out to the base
from
in town.
So what did you do in Air Force?
So I used to do like air movements, logistics, so weight balance of aircraft and loading up aircraft, quite physical work, which I really enjoy. And that's been hard to combine in my work. So so I did that for a while. And then after I had the Child Support Act, so I've actually been self-employed for about 5 years now.
Congratulations.
So and it was based on all of my previous work experience.
So move the Air Force, did you just decide, did you apply for a job with media, or was it just something that came up when you left the Air Force?
So I just went with the Child Support Network. Well, I actually first went to Kerry Packer and worked in aviation, but I knew that if I didn't get out of aviation...
Oh, you were like flying to Kerry Packer's helicopter?
I was doing aircraft operations, so all the operations are under my I knew that if I didn't get out of that, then...
It was related. You weren't suddenly a journalist or something.
But then when I went to the Child Support ANZ, then I did totally unrelated work. So I did coaching, and we did some amazing work with values and behaviour frameworks, that sort of stuff, which is what I do now. So looking at business processes, looking at their systems. In 2009, I did my Master's in Dispute Resolution, I did systems theory there, and that kind of sounds boring, but it's actually, it is really good for businesses to actually have those processes and that in place. So that's kind of, I look at everything from the ground up, and recruitment, everything from systems to recruitment to processes.
And your focus is still on daycare-type industry, or really
it's actually, I have nothing to do with that side of things. It's really just what I took from the Child Support Agency, which was their frameworks that they were using, the coaching frameworks, and I worked across all different industries, and
So you left Child Support and decided, okay, I'm going to go into business for myself. On that first day, week, month, you thought, okay, go get some clients. How did you go about that?
Where I was a bit naive. That was 5 years ago I started, and I probably didn't really think about what I would advise for people. So I went out and did all the beautiful business planning, and I did all of the, what I really should have done is hit the ground running with clients. And I think I'm speaking to a lot of business owners, they make that mistake, they want to get everything perfect. I even ordered the FPOS machine before I even had a client,
All those procrastination.
Yeah, it is. It's just in the end, it's just procrastination, and it's, you know, the fear of not jumping in and putting yourself out there. Because given my past military and past government experience, I had no experience selling to getting clients. So I would say if you're going to be something, that's the number one thing you need to focus.
Yeah, 10 hours of logo design.
Yeah.
One hour. Of
And knowing what's going to get you, so it was trial and error for me. So you're probably not going to just Google someone like me to come in and, like, I'm looking at, you know, fixing business processes, recruitment, that sort of stuff. You're not going to Google that. So my stuff has been word of mouth. And my first big client was my ex-CEO. So, I worked with her and I gave her a call and she's giving me a
Did you have some, did you give yourself some runway? Were you still working your regular job? You just cut off?
So I think it's a different world than that. And that was just after the GFC. It was only a couple of years after the GFC. So I was really, I think given the way things are, I think it'd be a good idea for people to maybe go part-time and do it that way, but I'm just not an all-or-nothing person.
It is slower if you do that. If you can't commit 100% of your time or the job is taking up too much time, it will slow you down.
That's right, and ultimately even part-time jobs will, so I just wanted to go in boots and all. But I would say that you have to know where your market is. I wasn't sure. So I got my website, I always look beautiful on my website, but not realising that's not really where my business is going to come from either.
Your problem is people they don't know you exist.
Yeah.
B, they probably either don't know they need you or don't really want to need you.
That's right.
Like they're really good, like, not many people ring up and wake up and go, oh wow, I totally need to sort out my systems. I'm going to find like a systems analyst type.
For what I do, so I do a lot of bullying investigations, even that side of things, so people focus on things.
Yeah.
I think I was a bit naive in thinking that people were going to know those sort of businesses, problems existed.
Even though
there's
mediators and stuff.
Yeah, and I'm a credible mediator as well, but I guess that it is, even CEOs in large organisations tend to not think there's anything wrong because they're not even really sure what's happening down there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, I need to be a bit more focused about it.
So your opportunity was that you're able to lean a little bit on your past networks to kind of get started.
So they were generally decision makers who actually were aware of some issues in their organisation.
Yeah.
But it's often when I went to networking events or spoke to other people, we really need someone like you in our business, but they generally were people at the coal face.
Yeah.
And it wasn't being filtered up to the decision makers. So it does take a level of self-awareness, I guess, for a business owner, CEO, even if it's, and interestingly, even in small businesses like plumbing business, and some of them are, they've got 20 staff, and they've got, if you've just got 3 or 4 issues with those staff,
they're not going to be big enough to have like a HR type person.
No, that's right. So then they can get someone in like me and do that. But then they're very busy workplaces, and sometimes it's in the back of their minds that they need someone like me.
Yeah.
So you've worked with the ex-CEO and started doing some work there.
Yeah.
So it was a referral
from that person to
fix some of their problems and they told one of their business friends. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's generally how my work has gone, and I'm not really sure it's ever going to be a Google situation where you Google. But I would like it if people would, I guess, take a chance in looking at something like this and saying, I need someone like that.
So what's some practical side of things you could do? Because, it's all kind of hypothetical. Give us an example of you go in and someone's getting harassed in the workplace, or what are some of the
More practical things. So this is going to sound strange, but one thing that is interesting to me is that people don't even know what they're supposed to be doing in their role. So duty statements.
Yeah.
So even just a simple process like that, I'm talking small to large. People are put into positions. Generally, they might be there to take over someone who's on short leave or they don't actually know what they're meant to be doing. So just simple things like that. So on a practical level, even things like duty statements. Recruitment is a big one, so it needs to start from there. So, what type of person, even if you are a small business, what type of person will fit in with my other team?
Yeah.
What am I looking for that person? And it's the recruitment process is where it all starts.
So you're sitting down and kind of interviewing people in the business and working out what's required. Go away, come back, listen.
Yeah. So here's my, the secret to my success is that people tell me everything. So even if I'm walking down on that, I don't know how I can make that sound more business-like, but I'm the sort of person who, it doesn't matter if they're the shopkeeper, you know, if I'm talking to the shop, people would tell me everything. And I don't then go and relate all of that word for word back to the business owner or the CEO, but I do pick out common themes, and that's where my systems knowledge comes in.
And then
I say, here's some things you can
do. So you managed to get the trust of all the people in the organisation to the point that they're quite casual with you in their language and approach. And then you don't go and tattletale on them, you actually just go, look, you have a problem, which is part of your employees don't think that you're looking after their best interests or something.
Yep.
And this is what I think
you're talking about.
That's
you have staff who spend half the day wondering what they're supposed to be doing next.
That's it, so I just want to make clear, I don't betray trust, because that's a gift that's been given to me, and that's why I started like this. But I pick up the themes, and there's always themes, and there's always things that come to me that I can report back. And it doesn't matter what, like a business owner might go, I don't want to spend that much on, you know, revamping the whole system.
Mm-hmm.
It can be something just very simple and very small.
So
you
get quite ongoing work with clients.
I do, and that's where, but it is, I probably have to think a little bit more about how I can expand that and how I can, can make it understood about what the work I do.
Yeah.
And getting business owners to understand the value in what I do, and it's really, it is really important.
So
it's not always tangible.
You mentioned before about it's not really something that people do. Do you do stuff on LinkedIn and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, so I've definitely got
on
my social media profiles, but LinkedIn, I find LinkedIn for me is not necessarily where I get a lot of interest from. It's where I can, in terms of actually employing someone like me.
Probably put some of that case studies on. Some of the case studies. This is the result of being this connected.
Yeah, I think LinkedIn is still kind of secondary marketing where people are sussing you out. So they've had an exposure to you in some capacity. They're like, or you've approached them or whatever, and they're like, well, what can I find out about that? Look, there's all these people who trust you, look at the projects you've got. I think that's what
I've been doing. So definitely that's, and that's definitely where I think it's really important to have all of your social media. So I've got a website, and I've got, I'm even on Twitter, so I do all that. And that's just to get myself out there and
be visible.
Yeah, be visible. I've also written some articles that are on LinkedIn, so I do have a writing background. I was a ministerial writer when I was working in government, so I have that background. And I'm currently writing a book at the moment on recovery from brain injury. I had a severe brain injury 10 years ago. So through neuroplasticity, I'm looking at some of those principles. So just looking at new ways of doing things, because we're living in a new world. It's
you're happy to embrace technology.
Absolutely, yeah. So I think that it's, I think at this very moment and now, in what's happening at the moment, the massive change, it feels like there's something, it's very hard to deal with it. But I think that if we can get it right and I can help people to do that, to push through that change.
So one of the hard things for businesses is firing people. Have you been in a position where you've had to kind of recommend someone be terminated?
Yeah, so that's so I have to say that is primarily
that this person is wasting time violating the process and they're just goofing off the face.
I've actually had to let go of myself. And what I say is I'm somebody who fires with love. I can actually, I can do it in a way that, and do you know what I think, in my experience, I've actually had people come back to me and say, do you know what, that's actually the best thing that happened for me. Because generally when someone is at a point where you feel you need to fire them, it actually means that they know themselves.
Yeah, they need to be somewhere else.
And I really do believe in that. So I think that ultimately it's a very hard thing. And I know business owners and CEOs will shy away from that.
It's probably the hardest thing.
It's the very hardest thing. Yeah.
Even firing customers is not brilliant either. But trying to have a conversation with who does HR so how do you kind of deal with the whole not letting people be employed anymore part of it? And he's like, it's really hard because you're thinking like, oh, what's going to happen to them? You sort of intellectually you hope, okay, they'll figure it out, they'll find a new job, or they'll follow back on family, or they'll work it out. It won't be like the end of their world. That's That's probably true, right, for most people.
Yeah.
Workshops and what they can do and where
absolutely,
they
and I think
and
that...
And all safety things. Look, you're probably better suited to doing this rather than what you're doing now.
That's exactly how I would
say. A lot of people probably know what I reckon.
No, I know. So that's where... So I do the tough stuff. That's what you could probably say to bring down.
So I can come behind you just to come in.
Well, people do, and they don't, and look, but I'm more likely to coach you on a conversation that you can have around that, but I'm happy to do that. So I'm someone who does the things that people don't want to do.
I forget the name of the movie, but there's one where he flies around America, he's the fire and guy.
Yeah,
yeah,
and he does it by video.
Yeah.
No, I don't advise that. But
that's fantastic. So what's the best business advice you've ever given or been given? What's that?
So it comes back to just hit the ground running with getting clients.
Yeah.
So even business plans these days are quite redundant, so that they'll change.
Yeah,
you know,
a one-page business plan.
Just one page. Don't spend. So absolutely, and especially in the current economic environment, they're not going to last more than a month. So I would say just hit the ground running with getting clients. That's really the most important thing.
It's such a bit of money,
and I love that.
I mean that.
Thank
you
very
much.
Thank you. It's cool. You need the wind whistling. It's quite windy outside. So that's why. So just a reminder, Beach Business Breakfast. Check out the website, beachbusinessbreakfast.com.au, put together by Jeremy's company, the world's leading
most successful web designers in Walls End.
Yes, so check that out. And it's only $10 to come to our breakfast to get. I've got an international chef. He's cooked overseas somewhere, I think. Not sure what, but yeah, it's great.
Thai in a bar in Thailand or something.
Fantastic people like Mel and the rest of the group. So,
yeah, awesome. Thanks very much.
Thank you.